accession number 29568, reel 5.
So did that mean that you had to take a ship back that you knew you'd go?
Yes, I went there. I actually was flown home in an old York, which was converted Lancaster bomber, and it took 4 days. We went to Calcutta, Karachi, and Malta, I think, and eventually back. Got tips of dying business too, and the thing lumbered along about 180 mph. And I'd never really flown before. As I say, in the Army's infinite wisdom. And that occupied the winter of 52.
And this aircraft that you were taken back on, was it the RAF who were supplying it?
I think it was probably an RAF plane, or whether it was chartered, I have no idea. Just as I say, it was a converted Lancaster bomber, I think.
Were you quite excited about that, you know? Soon
yes,
after the war.
Yes, reasonably, yes. And I remember I was invited to go out to the cockpit, so I mean, seeing a thing that just showed that each engine was using a gallon of petrol every 8 seconds. I remember that statistic. So every 2 seconds one had gone. Anyway.
And was it just troops that were on it as well? You know, with our fellow troops from, you know, different...
Yes, I think it was probably, I very little recollect. I went home with a brother officer, but I can't remember who else was on the plane. And I suppose it held 100 people. I absolutely no recollection, whatever. So it just took forever and ever to get there.
And at the stops that you had as well, did you have any time to see the places? Or was
no.
It
No, we just, I think we spent a night in each place. I was thankful to pile into bed and then off the next morning.
Okay, so you came all the way back and you went to this anti-tank course.
Yes, at Netherhaven in Wiltshire on Salisbury Plain.
Mm-hmm. What type of thing would they have you doing there, you know, against the tanks? What type of weapons and things did they use then?
Well, this is a thing called a 17-pounder, which was, as I say, what had been the anti-tank gun in the war, and was just about to be made obsolete in to give way to a thing called BAT, B-A-T, which I don't know what that stood for. Anyway, it was a different type of missile. And so anyway, we trundled this thing round Salisbury Plain, and I think the course started about 6 weeks or something like that.
Excuse me. And do you think this was in preparation for maybe some of the other areas that they thought?
No idea what the idea. I mean, as I say, I never used I did use anti-tanks again when I came back finally to this country, but not that 17-pounder, the new weapon. But I, as I say, I cannot imagine what the purpose it was. It seems to be a complete waste of the army's money. But I don't think you're too worried about that probably.
And the area where they did this training as well, is it a vast area? You know,
yes, Salisbury Plain, yes, it is a big area, yes. I don't know how many, great many, probably 1,000 acres, and where it's all poop off, shells in different directions and things.
Okay. And so what did you do after that then?
Well, then I think I may have had a small amount of leave, and then I went back again.
Okay. I see from your questionnaire as well that I think it's an air photo interpretation course.
Sorry. Oh, yes, that's quite right. That's absolutely right. Yes, that's absolutely right. I did that immediately after the... That's a fortnight at Benson in Oxfordshire. Absolutely right. I forgot all about it. Why the hell I said... Well, that actually was slightly more of more purpose, because we did at least have our photographs in there. No, that's absolutely right.
I would think it would be more interesting, wasn't it?
Yes, much. Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. And also much warmer. Sat in a classroom instead of sitting in a slit trench.
And when you say that as well, may I ask one question about the slit trench? You know, when you were in a slit trench, I would imagine it could get cold and muddy and things like that, did it?
Yes, it sort of became, of course, all chalk. And it wasn't all that muddy. Well, it obviously was because it was muddy. Yes, it's just cold and uncomfortable and very hard work digging too in the chalk, a sort of pickaxe stuff.
And would it have to be yourself that dug, or did you have any men who dug the trenches?
Well, I think we all dug it. Because on these courses we were all officers anyway, so we all got to and dug. We dug as shallow as we possibly get away with, and they'd bring the rum round in the middle of the night. It was a complete waste of time. It warmed you for about 5 seconds, and after that you're much colder than if you hadn't had it to start with.
So you did get some rum?
Yes, I think once they brought round some rum. Yeah, I don't like the stuff anyway. But.
And may I ask a question relating to, when you'd been in Malaya and that, did you ever get any alcohol out there, like a wee rum or anything there?
No, I don't think I ever bothered with alcohol then at all. I'm not sure I ever perhaps drank the odd bottle of beer or anything, but I didn't drink any alcohol at all, I don't think I'd say. No, we certainly didn't get it, the question of bringing it round into the jungle, and I don't think anybody, I don't think anybody thought of taking it with them.
And when we go in this air photo interpretation course, what exactly had you doing then? What type of thing would you be looking at?
Well, you're looking at our photographs and to interpret these photographs which are taken obviously from great height, and you had a thing called a stereoscope, which you looked in and if you got it adjusted, but it sort of shot up, gave it a 3D effect, and we used to peer down these things and. Try and identify what things were. I mean, again, that was the use of a layer because mostly there was sort of a whole lot of buildings and things. They run an idea of what they were all about.
And on the course as well, were you tested at all, or was it just purely a course?
I don't think there was anything we could be tested on that. I don't think so.
And were you quite interested in that one?
Yes. It's sort of a bit like this at the end of the day from peering down the thing. But it was quite interesting. As I say, it was nice and warm and pleasant.
Okay. And after that, I see from the questionnaire that in February 1953 you went back out to Malaya.
It may well have been February. I think that's probably right. They went out on the Danera, the Danera, which was a sister ship of the Dilwara, I think.
Were there any other Gordons with you, or were you just by yourself?
Yeah, well, there was a friend, a colleague from the regiment with me, yes. It was just a good old 28 days.
And this time, had you to worry about any other soldiers? Were you?
No, I hadn't got a draft. I was just on my own, and not with the regiment. It was lovely. I obviously had learnt some Malay by then, because in fact I offered to teach it going out if anybody was interested. I had a class, and also I said, I got so much wet correcting exercise I can't possibly do PT, and so I used to sit with a sort of glass of gin in the thing watching out people doing arms bend. No, it was actually rather fun, so I must have learnt it better than I'd intimated. And we had rather a jolly class, actually. It was quite fun.
And was it just officers who you were teaching?
Yeah, well, it could have been anybody. I think one or two volunteered and then fell out. I was allocated a funny little place in the stern of the ship, and it was a bit rough one, a couple of days. I think one or two fell out and didn't bother to come back. Yes, there was a... There were a few civilians. There was a Navy captain, I remember, and... various people. I think the class ended up by being about 12, so it was quite fun.
And could you get material at that time, to teach this language? Could you get books and
we just had blackboard and I made them do exercises and things.
And do you remember how you learnt it? Did you just pick it up?
I think I learnt it from a book, probably. And also by, yes, I can't really remember. Principally from a book, yes. Yes, Winstead's Colloquial Malaria. I think I still got the book at home.
So there was some material that you could get your hands on. And with, you know, in within the army, were there quite a number of people who could speak, you know, like languages like that, you know?
I think there were. I don't think anybody learned Malay in my regiment. I don't think, not to the same extent. And obviously, everybody had the odd few words, but I did try and learn it a bit better than that.
Why do you think that you wanted to take it further? Was it just something you were interested in?
Yes, I think it probably was.
And so most of them within the army, say, or within the regiment, would they be quite happy just speaking English apart from a few words of a local language?
Yes, I think so. After all, it wasn't really necessary, because... you didn't need to talk to the natives in the sort of villages and things, you didn't want to. And anybody that worked for the army spoke English. So, it's really quite unnecessary.
Okay.
I already had Latin and Greek and German and French then, so it sort of followed on, you know, from that.
It sounds as though you like languages.
Yes. I've always been interested in them, yeah.
And on this ship as well that you were going back on, this second ship, do you remember the accommodation that you had in this one?
Very much like the first. I shared a cabin with, I think, two others. I hardly remember, yeah, but I think we were three or something in the cabin.
And was it quite comfortable?
Yes, yes, perfectly comfortable. And there were a number of civilians, again, I think, attached to the army. There were four school teachers that we called the fishing fleet, because they all ended up either engaged or married, but eventually by the end of the trip. And indeed, this friend of mine from the regiment, actually, he engaged himself to one of them. I've got a picture of his, when I was best man, in there.
I remember the photograph. Mm. And did you have a Batman at that time? Was there anyone?
No. No, I don't. No, one didn't have a Batman. I suppose we looked after. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened. How we got more laundry done and those sort of things. There must have been some kind of service. I simply can't remember what it was.
And I know that you were teaching for part of the time, but. How did you manage to fill the days?
The ship organised activities for and I think we had sold all the officers and there must have been military activities. I can't actually remember what they were, but life was good enough going out.
And do you remember the ports you stopped at?
I think they probably would have been the same. There would be no, although there was no problems with Egypt, we didn't have to man the sides. I don't think we were allowed ashore, indeed. I'm sure we weren't. We stopped at Port Said, but nobody got off. And then I think it was the same old places, probably.
Well, did you get off for longer? You know?
No, I think they would have been the same sort of turnaround.
And once you got to Singapore, was it the same thing again, that you just went back up to Malaya and you got the train? Or?
I suppose so. I don't recall. We but then moved to a place called Tampin, which was much further south, in Lagos and Bilan State. And no recollection of how one got there, actually, how we both got there.
And
I suppose we must have taken a train, probably, yes.
And was this camp different from the first one?
It's different in that it was a much less potentially dangerous area. And it was, and indeed the emergency, I mean, the Brits were getting a sort of grip on the emergency by then, and it was on the whole, I mean, the trains were running and there were much fewer incidents, certainly in the south.
And I see that was 1953.
That would have been 53, yes.
The Gordons must have been out there for quite some time, were they?
I think they did 3 years. They were out there from 51 to 54. Usually a three-year tour.
Okay. So in this second camp, was it a similar type of style to the first one?
Yes, exactly the same.
A hutted compound again?
A compound, yes. But I became intelligence officer when I got there, and I had an office in the village in Tempin in the police station, I bought a potty little car and I used to go up and down to my office there. I think it's about 2 miles or something, which one couldn't have done at Tapper because it was a more dangerous area. And it was an awful little car. It had to be pushed by the mess boy in the morning and pushed by my staff in the end when we're coming back in order to get the thing going. But it sort of puttered along.
And was this quite a local car or something?
I can't remember where I bought it, but it's the most dreadful thing. It cost almost nothing. And I heard later it had been picked up at the bottom of a cliff for some time before. Anyway, it went, and that was all that mattered.
And do you think one of the reasons that you were chosen as an intelligence officer was because of the language?
Perhaps, yes. I think also I wasn't the world's greatest soldier, I don't think. I think I'm probably better in an intellectual capacity than a physical one, I would think.
And well, you described to us as well the police office, you know, the type of...
Well, it's the police station, uh-huh. And there was an inspector there and a couple of inspectors and obviously some... Black PC, when I say black, I don't mean disparagingly, probably Malay or Sikh or something, policeman too. And I had a little office and I had a staff of two, I think.
And the staff, were they Gordons or?
Yes. They again were people who considered one as a bank manager's son and one was coming from something else, anyway, slightly less. Slightly more intellectual and less rough than the average job.
And did you get any training to become an intelligence officer?
No, it's just a question of keeping maps and going around the companies largely a question of trying to keep the commanding officer informed of what's going on. I have reports submitted to me each evening of what people have been doing.
And who would give you the reports?
Hmm?
Who would give you the reports?
Well, the company commander. So, because the four companies were all on detachment away from Tampin in different parts within the battalion area, so they'd come up on the radio with their reports, which I had to correlate and put on the map where they'd been patrolling and all these sort of things. And also to the ace with the police and special branch about what appeared to be happening.
And so were you in close working contact with the police?
Yes. Quite close contact with them, yes. Yeah.
Would you say that would be on a daily basis?
Yes. I used to wander into his office. There was an English inspector and a Sikh. English chief inspector and the Sikh. No, I'm wrong. There was a superintendent there, that's right, called Norman Rodgrave. And a superintendent and a chief inspector and an inspector. Yes, there were three police officers there.
And was there any local people working in the police station?
What cleaners you mean?
No, you know, just local men who were police officers. Or
yes, I think there would have been. Probably Malays. I think they would tended to employ Malays rather than Chinese because they wouldn't they're less likely to have terrorist sympathies than the Chinese would. But I mean, most of the terrorists were, I think, 95% Chinese, and the odd Tamil and the odd Malay. But on the whole, they were all Chinese.
And when you say that, was the community like a mixed community? You know, mixed race community.
Yes, so very much so. Malays, as a generality, were thoroughly lazy and just wanted to be peaceful. And the Chinks, of course, were those that made the base work. and the Tamils were, well, the Tamils were, it turned into more of a menial task, really. Yeah.
And was it the Chinese who really wanted, you know, independence? Or?
Yes, 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 it was. Okay. Yes, the Malays, I think, were all just wanted to be left alone. I think the Tamils again, they really did do all the, I remember, all the menial tasks. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there was, like, when you say white police officers, would that have been British officers?
Yes, yes, they would be seconded from police force here. And
were you working what would be termed a normal working day at this point?
Yes, yes, yes. I used to get in my car after breakfast and go down to the office and come back in the evening. No, I'd come back for lunch, I think, probably, but yeah, it was all very, very civilised and pleasant.
But you were still working in your Gordon Highlanders uniform?
Yes, 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 very much so.
Okay. And you mentioned the mess boy. What exactly was his job?
Well, he was a charming Chinese chap called Wong. He was a sole steward, like. And I suspect he was probably a Chinese cook as well in the mess, I suspect. I can't remember. But the jocks all had regimental cooks. So I don't think we had a Chinese cook.
Okay. And was the intelligence that you gathered as well and then collated, was there ever times that you did hear that terrorists were in the area or anything?
Yes. Yes. I.e. that the police or special branch, if they had some information, then it'd be a question of which area it was in to in order to activate one of the companies to take action on it. Mm-hmm. And I would sometimes go to that company or sometimes they would take the informer as well to impart first hand. But generally it was done through a special branch. And also the companies themselves would I think most of the information must have come from us, really. I think we had the sources which were more than they had. But they would do routine patrolling as well, of course.
And who had managed to get these people as informers and that? Was that anything to do with your job, or was it more with the police or something?
Which people? The
informers?
No, it would be nothing to do with me at all. No, no, no. No, as I said, it was police through their sources, and they had informers and all that sort of stuff. It was entirely police.
And did you ever meet any of the informers?
Yes. Yes, yes. When I used to see the odd chap and the odd surrendered terrorists and things. Yes.
And the informers, did they tend to come from a certain section of the population, or was it?
No, I think I don't know particularly why they came. I mean, there was money involved. Obviously, they were rewarded for bringing information, and so that obviously is an incentive.
And the terrorists that you did see, you know, that had been taken into custody, had any of that, do you think, came from the intelligence that you had maybe dealt with, or?
No, not directly. Only as an intermediary, but it wouldn't have been anything I think I myself had found, no. I've actually jumped the gun. I'd forgotten. I went in Tampin. I did spend some time with A Company. Again, I'd forgotten before I became intelligence officer. And we were a place called Gamas, G-E-M-A-S. And that was the only time that I actually, with my student, made contact. We killed a couple of terrorists in a rubber estate, purely by accident. I think we were routine patrolling, and that's the only contact I physically, you know, I'd forgotten about that, and that's I then became intelligence officer after that, or sometime after that.
And because you'd managed to kill these men, did you then have to take them back to base?
Yes, you know, all the things, you tied them to a pole in order to carry them in. We're not allowed to take photographs of them in case they'd been badly disfigured in the killing, because then that could, if they'd got into the wrong hands, it's sort of adverse propaganda. But if one could bring the corpses in, and one did it for identification and so on, and the police took them over, and that was that. If it was in deep jungle, of course, then you had to helicopter them out or something like that, or helicopter somebody in, or you know, or something.
And do you think some of them maybe got away as well?
Yes. I think there were, yes, I don't know how many were, but we just, as I say, got a couple of the unlucky ones. Certainly I got away. We did a bit of a follow-up, and then the company also took us out, and they followed up. But I did nothing further resulted.
And when you did get these men, the weapons, or did they have weapons?
Yes, they had weapons. I can't remember what. But
I wondered if they were as sophisticated as the like the British armies were at that particular time. You know, I wondered who was supplying them with the weapons.
Well, they would have been, a lot of them would have been relics of the war, the Force 136 and all that stuff. We've read the history of Spencer Chapman, The Jungle is Neutral, when of course they were supplying weapons to them in order to fight the Japs. And of course the Chinese in fact were just putting the thing on one side for the eventual struggle to get rid of the Brits. There were a lot of old wartime weapons. I don't know, there's never any shortage of them, I don't think.
Okay, I just wondered how much actual intelligence you might have gathered, you know, from an incident like that, you know.
I think the answer is nil from that, probably. Just a chance encounter with a small. They were beginning to. I mean, the days of them. I don't know whether you read Derek Brown's obituary in this last edition of The Highlander, but he was. He just died not all that long ago, and he won his MC for. I think they ran into 100 or more of them, but they were. You know, they were then broken up into much smaller groups.
And did you know Derek Brown when you were out there?
Yes, I did. He had an elder brother who was also in the regiment, and a younger brother with whom I shared a cabin coming home finally from Malaya. I did indeed know him. Not all that well, but I certainly knew him.
And this company, this area that you were in with A Company as well, was there jungle there, or was it mostly rock?
Certainly there was jungle, yes. Okay. Yes. It wasn't quite as mountainous as where we've been before, but no, this is a massive jungle. And indeed, I started to write up one of the operations we did there called Operation Sirius, which I handed in to the museum a few months ago. I was rather guilty that I hadn't done it ages before. I handed it in with a banded cap and would say it'll be knocking about somewhere in the place. Which is quite a large operation. We did. By then, the terrorists, it became the era of gardening, where they started to try and grow their food in the jungle, because Templar had developed this policy of rehousing a lot of these scattered villages, putting them behind wire to stop the terrorists getting access to them, or making it much more difficult. And so therefore they find it far more difficult to get food. And so they then started gardening in the jungle, which of course meant cutting down trees. And then if you overflew them, of course, you could see these clearings. And Op Sirius was the result of one of these things, which the battalion took part in. And I can't remember what the result was. But we were gradually winning that particular war.
And one of the questions I did think of there as well was, you know, you were speaking about this particular area with A Company, but with both areas that you worked in, I was wondering, you know, if there was centres or areas of population, but you've mentioned villages, so was it generally villages that people lived in, you know, in the areas that you were in with the Gordon?
What, the natives?
Yes.
Yes, they all lived in villages, yes. There's no reason for them to live anywhere else.
And were these quite primitive villages, or were they reasonably modern?
Well, a place like Tampin, where we were based, was saying there's modern houses and things. But a lot of the villages were very primitive indeed. Yes, very much so. And they were mostly houses on stilts to stop the ants and things running up, all off, you know, that much above the ground, and also keep the damp out.
And how did the locals manage to maintain their lifestyle? Was it by working on these rubber plantations?
Yes, or working in tin mines. So there were tin mines, and there were also good palm oil, and you know, there were all sorts of industries like that. But mainly agriculture, I suppose.
And was there areas, you know, you've mentioned jungle and rubber plantations. Were there areas of the, well, where farms or agriculture was, you know, which was farming land?
Yes, mainly rice growing and that sort of thing. They used a lot of these water buffaloes for pulling ploughs and so on. But I suppose it was, yeah, I mean, they grew a lot of veg, and as I say, palm oil and rice, and I think that probably was the main thing, and a certain amount of grazing, obviously, of cattle, and also quite a lot of goat eaten. We used to eat a fair amount of goat.